Hey everyone, Chris Wan here, and this is Accents Out Loud, a podcast by Lucid Accent Consulting, your weekly glimpse on one person's take on English language learning, accents, experimentation, and learning. What's up everyone, and welcome to episode 4. Okay, this time around, it's again going to be a little foundational and sort of talking about something that's called the IPA, not the beer, not the alcohol, but it's called the International Phonetic Alphabet. Okay. And it's an alphabetic system, and the idea is each sound or each symbol in this alphabet reflects one specific sound. Now, it's not rocket science, it's not groundbreaking, but the idea behind it is if you learn this system for the International Phonetic Alphabet, if you learn how to spell or read this alphabet system, you can consistently tell on, if you were to Google a word you don't know, you would be able to consistently tell how to produce that word properly, okay? Whereas in English, a lot of times the word, the letters, there's silent letters, there's vowels that sound different in different contexts. Like, I don't know, the O in woman, it's a w, w, it's not a wo, wo, right? It's w, 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 w. It's not a wo sound. Which, if you were to do W-O by itself, it would be a wo sound, right? Or W-O-E, wo. The idea behind this International Phonetic Alphabet is that you can learn how to properly identify words by what sound they should be making, okay? And so that's the huge sort of advantage of doing it this way, is you can read words in this International Phonetic Alphabet, or IPA, and consistently know how to pronounce a word. Again, like I said before, there are no silent letters in the International Phonetic Spelling. So that's another great thing, because then you're not going to get some weird word like yacht, Y-A-C-H-T. You're not going to get it spelt weird. Right, you're going to have the y sound, the a sound, and the t sound, yacht, right? That's how you would spell it in the International Phonetic Alphabet. So it's a really useful tool for people. Yes, it'll take some time in the very, very beginning to understand sort of how the sounds are coming out and things like that, but I think it's a helpful tool. I don't know. Maybe people can let me know if they don't find it helpful. But the idea behind it, it's that this is sort of the linguistic foundation that people have. So your linguistics majors students, your speech language pathology students, and then maybe your voice coach or dialect coaches might also be trained or be able to read the International Phonetic Alphabet. Right. If you've learned a different language, you might also have stumbled upon this as well. But totally, I think it's an important resource that is helpful for you to break it down. Okay. I would totally recommend in this situation to actually try to visualize it. So check out the show notes. Check out the links. I'll try and post all that information for you to actually look at it, because I think there is a benefit to being visual specifically for this topic. You can go on Wikipedia, do some Googling, try and figure it out that way. But the way that you'll want to identify, and the sort of typical framework per se of this organized alphabet, is you're going to have different placement of sound in your mouth. I did an anatomy discussion last episode, and the idea is that's along the x-axis of this table. So it'll go bilabial, labial-dental, dental, alveolar, post-alveolar, retroflex, palatal-alveolar, uvular, pharyngeal, glottal. And so the idea is you're sort of moving from the front of your mouth. So bilabial would be both your lips. That's a sound that is made from both your lips. Labiodental is your top lip and your top teeth and your bottom lip. Dental is your teeth. Alveolar is your tongue is behind your teeth and so forth. So it's just slowly moving further into your mouth. And along the side, the y-axis, we're going with different ways to produce sound. Okay, if that didn't make sense to you, that's fine. That's what we're discussing here. There's a lot of sort of scientific or fancy words, but I think because it is a heavier topic, because it is something that's a bit more complex with new words, new concepts, it's just good to have a visual reference to support your understanding, okay? So the main two things I'm going to talk about today are sort of consonants and vowels. I'm not going to really do as much of the diacritics, which are sort of more special, nuanced subtleties to people's sounds. Like sometimes people can be a bit more nasal in their speech. So when someone's talking like this, they're still making the right sounds, their placement's the same, but it's just overall a little bit more nasally when people are talking, right? And so it's not a matter of their placement, it's just more nasal. So things like diacritics can sort of comment on these sort of nuanced subtleties in people's speeches, but for the matters of this, and I'm trying to keep it as simple or as simple in my mind as I can think of it, we're going to avoid that piece. Okay. So yeah, like I said before, along the top x-axis, you're going to get placement of the sound, where it's important to focus your attention so that the sound is in the right spot in your mouth. If you can't get the right placement of where the sound is going to be in your mouth, then that's going to affect how you actually produce the sound correctly, right? If you are trying to make, let's say, for example, a P sound, the P sound, if you don't have lips, I don't know, you born without lips, that's going to be a harder sound for you to make because the P sound is made with both your lips, top and bottom lip, right? Even just think for yourself now or follow along. If you're in the car, make the sound to yourself. If you're at home, make the sound to yourself. If you just do pa, 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 really just pay attention. Where does that sound come from? What part of my mouth is making that sound? It's the lips. Pa, pa, pa. Both your lips come together, and then they release, come together, then they release, right? Same thing with ba, 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 ba. You can't make that sound with your tongue. It has to be your lips. Ba, ba, ba. So it's good to think of that as bilabial, okay? Labial dental, if you sort of go down a little bit, you'll see an F and a V in that column. F, V. Those two sounds that are important in English, F and V, you've got your top teeth touching your bottom lip. F, V. Those are labial dental sounds. You've got some other symbols, and definitely there's a lot of symbols going on. You might not recognize a lot of them. That's okay. I don't need you to recognize all of them. Okay, and so try not to get bogged down on the idea or get overwhelmed by the idea of all these other symbols that are not important. Because like I said before, this is an international phonetic alphabet. So it's trying its best to show and represent all the sounds that are used in language, period. Not English specific. So some of these sounds are not sounds that an English speaker like myself, and a native English, North American English speaker can make. And so you don't need to worry about all of them. In the show notes or in the episode notes, I'll circle the ones that I think are more important for you to be aware of. And so don't worry too much. Okay. Dental is a sound that is with your teeth. Your tongue is sticking out between your teeth. So the cue for that is th and the, those two sounds. So like in the words think and the, your tongue is coming out between your teeth, and that's the cue I want you to pay attention to. For the sounds ta and da, those are under the column alveolar. And alveolar is just referencing the hard ridge just behind your teeth. Right? If you were to just imagine using your tongue to sort of brush against the back of your teeth, just a little bit up, so it's starting to touch the roof of your mouth, just behind your teeth, that's the alveolar ridge. And so those are alveolar sounds. Okay, makes sense? Other sounds that are important in that alveolar region are your N sound, N, like Nancy. Your S and your Z sound, S, Z, both of those, your tongue is right behind your teeth along the ridge up there. Your R sound is in that location as well. R, it doesn't actually touch the roof of your mouth, but it's your tongue is sort of sticking up a little bit just in that general position. Post-alveolar is just behind that ridge, and you're going to get more of a sh, sh, sh. So your tongue is bunched up a little bit further back in the mouth and just a little bit behind that ridge. Other sounds that might, as we move further and further back, you're going to get things like your your velar sounds, your k, g. Now it's not the front of your mouth, your tongue that's touching, it's sort of the back of your tongue that's lifting up and touching the roof of your mouth. In k, g, or ng, at the end of a sound like king, ng. Those are the real big ones I want you to think about, okay? You can also, some other sounds are gonna be like your H sound, h, that's under the glottal column, h. You're not really making any shapes with your mouth, you're just sort of breathing out. So the idea in glottal would be mainly focused at your vocal cords. You're just sort of relaxed, breathing out. Ha, right? So those are sort of what I'm covering for the x-axis of this graph. Like I said before, bilabial, labial dental, dental, alveolar, post-alveolar. We talked a little bit about your velar as well, and then glottal. Right, we skipped over your retroflex a little bit, your palatal. Your uvular and your pharyngeal. Okay. I skipped over the y sound, which is your palatal. It's that Y sound. But again, we're just trying to go as simple as I can. Don't want to bombard, don't want to jump around too much. Okay. On the y-axis, okay, we've got some new words. We've got plosive, nasal, trill, tap or flap, fricative, lateral fricative, approximate, lateral approximate. And you can sort of think of these different words as descriptors or words that describe the manner of articulation. Okay? And so for me, one of the biggest things that I can think of and why it's so important is we need to identify how you make sound, right? The x-axis is where you make the sound, but the y-axis talks about how you make the sound. And now there's a few different ways we make sounds. If you think of P and B, P, B, the way that we make that sound is it's very sort of an abrupt sound. It doesn't start gradually. You can't gradually start a P sound, right? It's sort of like a sudden, it happens and then it's gone. You can't hold a P sound, right? You can repeat it a few times. So you can say pa 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 to keep that P going. But you can't hold one single P and make it last for 2 seconds, let's say. You can, however, make an S sound last for 2 seconds. It keeps going. So the idea along the y-axis is that it's showing or describing to you the different ways or different manners of articulation, okay? So plosives, the way that we describe them to people, is it's a buildup of pressure that is then released, okay? You can think of it when you make that P sound, the pressure builds up behind your lips because your lips are closed, and then once your lips open, that pressure is released and the P comes out, right? You can keep making sound, but it's no longer that P sound, right? If I say pa, the P is gone and you're just having that sound continue. But the idea, like I said before, and the main thing I want to drive home is that you can't hold a P sound. It builds up in pressure behind your lips and then you release it. Same thing to do with a B sound. So if we go across from left to right, on all the plosives that are important, we have p, b, t, d, and k, g. Those are the main ones that we want to talk about today. Bilabial, pb, alveolar, td, and velar, kg. Those are the big ones that we want. Yes, for all you linguistics people, we might talk about glottal later on, but for the purposes of this, I don't think it's as important right now, okay? Nasal. Nasal's the next row down, and nasal just means that we are making the sound come out from our nose, okay? The three that are important for us are in the bilabial section, just under the P and B, the N in the alveolar section, just under the T and the D, and the weird squiggly one, N, under the velar section, under the K and G. Those are the three sort of columns that I want you to pay attention to in this case. And like I said before, if it's under the bilabial section, then your mouth, your lips are important. So for the M sound, my lips are together, and the air is actually escaping from my nose. It's not being built up behind my lips. It just sort of comes out as it wants, and you can't really hold it back, but it comes out as it wants out of your nose. Okay. Same thing with the T and the D, that column. Under alveolar, we have the N sound. This time around, my lips are relaxed, so there might be an opening. But you can notice my tongue is touching behind my teeth. And that's actually acting as a sort of barrier to air coming out of the mouth. So what does the air do? It comes out of the nose. And you get more of a for Nancy or new or newt. I don't know. N words. Okay? Run. And again, you should be able to feel that air coming out of your nose, right? If, for example, we were to plug our nose during this time for the M sound, or the N sound, you're actually blocking that air from coming out, and therefore you stop that sound from coming out. Same thing goes for under the velar column in the nasal row. That N with sort of the, it almost looks like the curl of the G just is added to that N. That's the NG sound. In like king, ring, sing. It's not, although you write it as NG, we don't do ng, which would be the N sound by itself, ng, and g for the G sound, right? So this is sort of a good example of why this International Phonetic Alphabet is important, because when you see NG, you don't actually pronounce the NG G sound. You actually do another sound, which is ng, right? Which is, again, also very different from the N sound. Right. Sometimes people who can't do this NG sound have a lot of trouble with words that have NG in them. For example, one that's super hard for them might be the word singing. Right? I might get more of a sinning or sinning or singing, but they might not have the control to do singing, which would be a double NG sound. So if somebody had trouble with the N sound or the NG sound and they keep doing the N sound, my comment to them would be to try and feel where they're making that K or the G sound, K, G. That's where your tongue needs to be when you're making that NG sound. You just have to get the air to come out the nose instead of being built up in pressure behind the tongue and then released in that k, gown, k or g sound. Okay. We'll go to, let's see, what's most important. We'll go to fricatives next, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 rows down. The one that I want you to pay attention to is the F, the V, the two symbols right beside the F and the V. So they would be the dental sounds, the dental column, the alveolar column, the post-alveolar column. All of those are important columns. Okay, let's start with the F and the V. So the F and the V sound are made with, like I said before, your top teeth and your bottom lip. So let's say you had no top teeth. This would be a sound that I would expect might start changing a little bit, because you need that combination of the top teeth and the bottom lip to effectively and accurately produce this sound. Okay? But what you're doing with this sound is you have a constant turbulent airflow coming out of the mouth. It's not like your plosives, which are building up pressure and then release. This is a sound, a fricative is a sound that is sort of like a turbulent stream of air that's coming out your mouth. Okay, you can kind of think of it like, in my mind, the thing that comes to mind is, I think of turbulence, air turbulence, when you're flying. It's kind of bumpy, choppy air that makes sort of a vibration, right? Same sort of thing, when you're breathing out to make sound, you want that air to be choppy or turbulent. And so what you're doing in this case is you're closing the mouth to kind of not let it just all come out without making a sound. You're trying to close it, but not fully close it. Kind of like how when you're blowing air across the top of a bottle, that air becomes a little bit more turbulent and it starts to resonate in the bottle, and that's how you make that sound come out. Let me know if that's way over the top of your head. But the idea is your top lip, your bottom lip and your top teeth make contact, and then you just blow air out between them. You want to imagine trying to force air out the front of your mouth. And the idea is that you're trying, imagine it's almost as if you want to squeeze air out between your front two teeth. That's how I imagine it. And you don't, when you're breathing out and you're forcing this air, you're putting a lot of effort into it. Sometimes I actually feel it. I feel that air almost touching my upper lip. If I breathe hard enough and push with enough airflow. Same thing with the V sound. If I push with enough force and focus, I can actually feel my top lip vibrate. And I almost feel like my teeth are almost vibrating, my top teeth. So these are things that are good cues for you to pay attention to. I think that this is something that's helpful for that, because it's really going to give you those cues that are helpful for your consonants, okay? The next one would be your dental. So your dental, if you look at that diagram, the one almost looks like a zero with a line through it. That's the Greek symbol or Greek letter theta. That's the symbol we use for the th sound, okay? The other one, which almost looks like a backward six with a line through the sort of tail, that one is your voiced version of a TH. Excuse me. And that one is also another Greek, I think it's Greek. Maybe I may be lying. It seems like Wikipedia is telling me it's an old English and Icelandic letter, eth. Anyways, those are the two symbols that you want to remember, okay? Theta and eth. And those reflect th and th, those two th sounds, respectively. And yes, there are two TH sounds. Th, so like think, thin, thank, and your F, which would be the, those, that. That's the voiced version. And the idea in both of them that I just want you to remember is you have to stick out your tongue in between your teeth. A lot of times in other languages, you don't have this sound. So this is an important sound if you want to master an appropriate TH sound, okay? An appropriate English TH. It is not necessary to learn if the goal is to sound or to be understandable, because a lot of people they might substitute it for a close enough sound. But I recognize that a lot of people want to learn the proper TH sound that North American English speakers, or actually all English speakers use. This is how you do it. Okay. I think if you, it's kind of a loaded topic. I've talked about it before in my previous episode when I talk about accentedness, understandability, and intelligibility and comprehensibility, and sort of the pros of getting this TH are not, although it would help with the accentedness, it doesn't necessarily help with your intelligibility or comprehensibility. So therefore, it's a less urgent thing or less of a priority in my mind when clients are asking about sounds. So this is a sound that I'll talk about, I'll teach them if they're interested, but it's not something I push on people, because I think when people are compensating with a different sound, then it's usually good enough. It's usually understandable enough that somebody, a native English speaker or a non-native English speaker can still figure out what you're trying to say. Okay. We'll jump over to your S and your Z, which is alveolar. They're your alveolar fricatives. And so the Q for you is your tongue is behind the teeth in the same spot that it would be for your T or your D. But again, your airflow is coming out turbulently. You're not stopping the air, it's just coming out. So you can even start an S sound pretty quietly. You can do and ramp up in volume. But you can't really start a T sound or a D sound. You can't start it quiet and then ramp it up, right? So the S and the Z, alveolar fricatives. Think turbulent air, tongues behind the teeth. Post-alveolar, you've got these two new sort of squiggly lines. Post-alveolar, you've got something that looks almost like a Loch Ness Monster or an S that's stretched a little bit taller. And then you've also got this Z that almost looks like a 3. Those are your two post-alveolar symbols. I don't actually quite remember the letter for the S. The stretched out S is Esh. And the 3 is called, I'm just looking it up here because I actually don't know. Ez? I might be butchering that name. I don't actually know it. I just know it as sh and zh. So sh, zh. The tongue is a little bit more bunched back in the mouth, just slightly behind the S and the Z. And I almost feel like I'm rounding my lips a little bit more. Sh and zh. Okay. Like I said before, these ones, turbulent airflow. Tongue's a little bit further back in the mouth than the S and the Z. Okay. Let's see what else. The H sound. The H sound also falls into this category of fricatives. And what I want you to remember from this one and what I want you to take away from this one is you just have to sort of breathe out. Huh. Huh. Don't have to worry about a specific spot in the mouth. Huh. Right? You're just sort of relaxed. Your throat is open wide. You're not using your tongue. Your tongue is in a relaxed spot. Your mouth is open. Huh. That's that H sound. Sometimes I'll get some clients who are making something similar, but it almost sounds a bit more rough, or like their throat is closing a little bit more. They might have more of a ha, ha. So you might get more of a hello, how are you? Just relax that throat a little bit more to get the native English sounding hi, how are you, right? And of course, I'm exaggerating these things a little bit more just so it's easier to hear, easier to pick up. But the idea is you play with it, right? You play with it, you exaggerate it, you get used to that sound, you get used to the how you make that sound, and then you slowly taper it back. You slowly exaggerate it a bit less, right? But those are the fricatives that are important. We've got the F, the V, the THs under the dental, the S and the Z in the alveolar, and the SH and the ZH in the post-alveolar, as well as the H under the glottal side. Okay. The next one we want to do is the approximant. And the only one we really want is the alveolar. The sort of like an upside down R. I'm just going to use Wikipedia really quickly while I'm talking to you just to figure out if there's a fancy name for it. Let's see what they say. There's a fancy name. Is there some sort of Greek name? I don't know. I can't figure it out. Anyways, that's the R sound that we have in North American English. What other languages might have is more of a trilled R or a tapped R. But for the ruh, that sound, then it's that upside down backwards R. And what this is sort of describing is kind of like a fricative. Your tongue is getting close to that alveolar spot in your mouth, but it's not actually touching it. It's almost like, it's approximating it. I guess that's sort of pretty self-explanatory. The only thing is it's a little bit, it's approximating touching a little bit less than fricative. So let's say I want you to imagine touching is fully touching. Fricative is maybe like a 1 to 2 millimeter gap. Approximant is maybe 2 to 3 millimeter gap, if that makes any sense in your mind. What I want you to think about And what I think is important here is that we talk about sort of how that tongue is moving. So the way that I think about it, the manner of articulation is you're narrowing near that alveolar ridge. So your tongue is starting to look like it's about to touch the top of your mouth just behind the teeth, but it's not. The place of it, of where it's touching, is the alveolar ridge, like I mentioned before. So just behind the teeth. You're starting to make sound with your throat. Air is coming out of the mouth. That's sort of how, and it's sort of almost bunched up. It's almost, your tongue is just sort of floating in midair. It's not touching anything. It's just there, just in your mouth. And that's how I want you to think about it. Whereas something like, and I will butcher this because I don't know how to do a trill, is when people do, I can't even do it. I don't know if I'm going to butcher it, but let's say when people do, now that I'm saying, trying to say it out loud, it doesn't work. Like, I can't do it because I can't trill my R's. That's as close as I can get. But that's sort of a tapping motion of your tongue against that alveolar spot in your mouth. We're not tapping. We're not touching at all with the North American R or the English R. Let's see what else we want to talk about. Next one, we want to do the L sound that is also in the alveolar section in the lateral approximant. And that's your L. And that, what that's doing is your tongue is going up towards that roof of your mouth, along that, behind the teeth, and the air is escaping around the sides of your tongue, out your mouth. Right? So if we say, laughter, like, lose, love, the way that I sort of think about it is, it's reaching up, your tongue's reaching up, sometimes it's actually touching the roof of your mouth, and that air is escaping around the sides. Sort of, you can imagine it going like towards your cheeks and then out the front of your mouth. Okay. Let's see what else I missed. Palatal approximant is another one. Excuse the sirens outside. But palatal approximant, that's the y sound. In this case, it's symbolized by a J sound, or J letter, the letter J. Why was that so awkward? Palatal approximant, y. When you're saying that sound, think about where your lips are, your tongue is, how that sound is made. When you're making that sound, we've got yeah, yeah. I've got sort of that back of my tongue lifting up, touching that roof of my mouth. And air is coming out of my mouth. Most languages do have that sound. So that's one that I'm not as concerned with. But yeah, that's sort of what I wanted to cover for today on the consonants. Like I said, recap, we've got the place of articulation along the top, sort of the x-axis. The y-axis is the manner of articulation. Wrap your heads around that a bit. Test it out. Figure it out for yourself. Those are important because I think sometimes when people have trouble with these sounds, it's because their native language, their first language, doesn't have this sound. So they'll compensate by making a pretty close sound that's somewhere nearby. Like I said before, your TH sounds might not be something that are in your language, your native English language. So you might compensate with more of a T sound, a D sound, or an S or a Z sound, because those are close, right? So instead of, instead of, let's say, teeth, you might get more of a teeth. Or wreath. You might get more maybe wreath. Right? 1, 2, 3 might become more 1, 2, 3. So you're compensating. You're not making that TH sound. You're getting an S sound that's coming out a bit more, right? 1, 2, 3. People can still understand that you're trying to say a TH, but it does give away the fact that your English is accented. Okay? So a good sort of introductory lesson on International Phonetic Alphabet. We'll stop there for now. I'll talk about vowels next time. Subscribe if this appeals to you. Leave a rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a comment if you feel so inclined and or, I don't know, if you feel like you want to steer this thing into a direction that works for you. If audio isn't your thing, check out my Facebook, my Insta, my website, lucidaccent.com. See you next time.